What's up, fellas? It's Bush here. We have tons of tools to get you ready to smoke your buffoon league mates in our redraft rankings manifesto. Whether you're looking for our consensus tiered-based rankings, top 200s, and by position, fantasy football news blurbs to keep you informed and find this year's Puka Nacua, risk ratings so you know how risky the draft picks you're spending are, the truth series so you can see how their 2023 season went, or you can compare our rankings to Sleeper, to ESPN, to Underdog, to Yahoo, to NFL, whichever platform you're drafting on, we have you covered this year with our Redraft Rankings Manifesto. Right now, you can get our draft guide for free by signing up on Underdog Fantasy using just $10 and using code FSE. If you already have an Underdog account or you can't play where you live, you can also head to flockfantasy.com. Use the code FSE for a 7-day free trial, 30% off any of the packages, and all of that is linked in the description of all of our videos if you need the links for that. All right, let's roll the pod. It has been just over 3 months since the NFL draft. So today, what we're doing is we're giving you guys updated Superflex rookie rankings. We're going to go through our top 30 overall rookies in Superflex leagues and give you guys an idea of what has changed really since the last time we did this video. And of course, we'll link the first video in the description of this one and kind of what we noticed, because you and I combined are in what, 25 dynasty leagues almost. So we've already had all of our rookie drafts. We've seen the market value of these players. We've seen how tradable they are. So for those of you guys that maybe are having your rookie drafts later, or maybe you can use this advice to go out and buy and sell some of these players, this should be kind of applicable. I think it's good to get an updated version of the rookie rankings on the record here, because this is, you know, the time of year where we're actually starting to learn a lot of information. And like I said, some people still haven't had the rookie drafts yet. So this could be informative for a couple of things.
Yeah, 100%. At the end of the day, not much has changed in terms of the overall players themselves from the last time we made this video. But at the end of the day, like Corey said, a lot of you guys are drafting at this current point. Some more notable information that we've learned about these guys in this offseason, whether it's their redraft projection, whether it's also just how they're doing in terms of their OTAs. A lot of interesting information that we can apply to our rookie draft analysis, just based solely off of not what they were as prospects, but more so like what's changed since then.
Yeah, I remember 2 years ago, Damian Pierce was a prime example. Someone going near like the 2-3 turn of rookie drafts, or like maybe the mid to late second round, a guy that really rose up this time of year because we was getting so much buzz about potentially being the starting running back. So let's not waste any time. Let's get right into the first tier of guys. Nothing has changed for us here. These are the two guys we would spend the 101 on in a super flex league, pending how your roster looks. So we got a lot of questions all spring about, I already have the 104. I have two good quarterbacks already. Should I take Marvin Harrison 101 and then let whatever quarterback falls to me at 104 and pair him instead of taking Caleb Williams 101 and hoping Malik Nabers fell there? I kind of capitulated on that take that, you know what, it's fine. Marvin Harrison Jr. and Caleb Williams, to me, I have Caleb Williams as my 6th overall player in Superflex overall startup rankings right now. Marvin Harrison is my 12th overall player. So if I had to, I would definitely prefer to take Caleb Williams, but in certain specialized circumstances, you can't trade down, can't do your due diligence, as we talked about a million times, then I was okay doing it. Quick case for both of these guys is, I mean, Caleb was a great prospect walking in to 3-stack, a great wide receivers, a good tight end, a good run game. The only question we have about him is coaching. And then Marvin Harrison, I mean, he's a 1-2 turn pick in Underdog drafts right now from a redraft perspective. And he's a 21-year-old wide receiver, 22-year-old wide receiver who ranked as the best prospect in the FSE prospect model, 97.19% FSE grade. So these two guys are first round startup picks, and nothing really changed for us in terms of what we thought of before until what we thought of now, except Marvin is a little bit more stomachable at that 101 pick than what we previously thought.
Yeah. So in currently in my rankings right now, you kind of alluded to, you have them 6 and 12 respectively. For me, I personally have Caleb Williams as my 6th overall player, Marvin Harrison Jr. as my 10th overall player. And the way I kind of view it right now is that Caleb Williams, I have grouped with the other three wide receivers there, CD Lamb, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson. I've come to grips currently. Again, I would prefer those three wide receivers, but if somebody were to say that they had Marvin Harrison Jr. even higher, again, at the end of the day, his redraft projection, while I do prefer CD Lamb, the 2nd overall player off the board, Jamar Chase, the 4th overall player off the board, Justin Jefferson, the 5th overall player off the board, the main allure of those guys going into the offseason was their redraft projections were just so much higher. And I would argue, of course, there is a tier between them and Marv in redraft, but the fact that Marvin Harrison Jr. is going off the board as the 9th overall wide receiver 13.5 overall ADP on Underdog, the highest overall drafted rookie receiver we have ever seen. It makes it a lot more stomachable. Again, do your due diligence. I know Ethan's probably in the comment section right now commenting due diligence as we're speaking. But yeah, if you have to take Marvin Harrison Jr. over Caleb Williams, I'm not going to argue it. Again, would you want a second round pick to be able to get some insurance to do that? Absolutely. But if you're in a position where you have two strong quarterbacks, like let's just say you have Kyler Murray and Jordan Love with Jared Goff as your quarterback three, taking Caleb Williams just to take Caleb Williams, knowing that it's going to be hard to trade those quarterbacks in the league market you're in, just kind of feels like not a wasted pick, because obviously you're still getting an extremely valuable player, but a lost opportunity in the sense that you could have spread some of the wealth to that top end of your wide receiver position. Like you said with Caleb Williams as well, this is a guy that's going off the board as the quarterback 13 on Underdog as a rookie. And you can even make the argument at quarterback 13, he's quite the value there. He's a guy that I found myself consistently drafting at this point, currently over on Underdog at that type of valuation, talking about quarterback 13 as a rookie. He's a guy who I have 18.1% ownership of over on Underdog. So been drafting a lot of Caleb Williams. I do feel like the ceiling, like you said, as a prospect, absolutely there. The weapons core that he's developing into, I mean, we're going to talk about one of his teammates in a second, is going to build up for a very strong rookie campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. And with both of these guys too, if you guys are just coming back to the scene, maybe you're in a more casual dynasty league, you haven't had your rookie draft yet because, you know, people don't like to come back and make their decisions on their rookie players until training camps, until preseasons. You definitely need to check out flockfantasy.com because we have tons of other dynasty tools, our dynasty trade value charts, our dynasty rankings overall that we're making reference to throughout this video. So definitely check that out. Link is down below in the description for that. And of course, our dynasty rookie draft guide is free with an Underdog sign up, as you guys can see on the bottom and the top of the screen there with promo code FSE. So getting into the second and third round startup pick caliber assets here, we have Malik Nabers, wide receiver of the New York Giants, Drake May, quarterback of the New England Patriots, and Jaden Daniels, quarterback of the Washington Commanders. Previously, when we did this exercise, me and you were both steadfast. Drake May is 103. And even though Drake May is still probably like the 103 in my heart, I did move him down to 104 behind Malik Nabers because the market sentiment on Malik Nabers and Jaden Daniels, for that matter, but specifically Malik Nabers, is that Malik Nabers consistently in a lot of the rookie drafts that I was in was going 103, 104, and that was basically his floor. He was consistently going ahead of Drake May. I saw Drake May fall a little bit in a lot of the rookie drafts that you guys told us about. You're like, I got Drake May at 106 or 107 or sometimes even lower than
sometimes.
That. Again, when the market value and the market sentiment is that Drake May landed in a quarterback landing spot that isn't as good as maybe we wanted him to go to in Minnesota or one of the other places he could have gone to, that needs to factor in to some degree in our grade. So while I have no real changing stance on what I thought of Drake May the last time we did this video, I think the Patriots are doing a decent job. It's a well-run franchise, that kind of thing. I have to capitulate a little bit on the market sentiment that he is not as valuable as Malik Nabers and Jaden Daniels. Again, I still have him ranked ahead of Jaden Daniels because obviously I'm not just ranking market value. I need to give my actual opinion. But for me, Drake May can't be the type of guy that you're like, yeah, I'd rather have Drake May than Jaden Daniels and a second round pick, or Jaden, like, I'd rather trade up for Drake May instead of just take him when he falls. Like, a lot of you guys were taking him when he fell is basically my point.
Yeah, I've noticed that a lot in the markets that I've been in. Again, a couple of times I have been willing to take him 103, 104 personally, but like you said, the majority of the leagues that I'm in, he's the type of guy that was going more so 104, 105. Again, not too many rooms that I was in specifically saw him fall below even the 106, but a lot of your guys' rooms, like you said, when people are a little bit more pessimistic about the player, people more pessimistic about his ability to be able to adapt on day one. I mean, you can make the argument that given the offseason and what we can expect for the Patriots coming into the year, that maybe that is correct. You know, at the end of the day, at this point, it looks like Jacoby Brissett will probably open the year as a starter. You're making the bet on Drake May to accumulate value after the year. It's probably more likely that the guy, Malik Nabers, who's going in the early third round on Underdog, will be able to return immediate value. Again, long term, I need a quarterback. I'm still willing to take Drake May as the third overall player. But from an even surface level, let's just say you need wide receiver and quarterback evenly. Let's just say you have Kyler Murray plus Jared Goff as your quarterbacks, and your wide receiver one is like, I don't know, not A.J. Brown, but right after that, Chris Olave. Roma Dunze, we're going to talk about in a second. Your wide receiver one is Chris Olave. Your wide receiver two is Devontae Smith. And you, T. Higgins, and you want a little bit of an upgrade to that overall number one wide receiver, I'm perfectly fine with taking Malik Nabers. Again, the redraft market's extremely high on him. This is a guy on Underdog going in the early third round, despite the history of bad offenses not being able to produce stud overall wide receiver finishes in redraft. That just kind of goes to show you that the market views Malik Nabers as an outlier, both as a talent and a potential target commander on that Giants offense. Again, if you're just playing the even value, I need both quarterback and wide receiver relatively evenly, it's more than likely that Malik Nabers will pay off sooner from a trade asset standpoint than Drake May will.
Yeah, and I also think the market is likely to sour on Malik Nabers slowly if he's not performing at a high level. Whereas if Drake May comes out there, week four is his first start, and week nine, he hasn't really looked great yet, people are going to sour a lot faster on Drake May because they were less likely to take him over Malik Nabers. And while you and I can love Drake May all we want, we have to factor in what the market would do in a downside risk scenario. And same applies for Jaden Daniels, because Jaden Daniels right now, in my opinion, and I literally put him on the thumbnail of the league winning quarterbacks video, he has a much better redraft projection than Drake May. Number one, because he's actually going to be starting from week one. And number two, because he's this rushing quarterback. And you guys might be thinking like, okay, why didn't you say this all the way back in April? Nothing has changed. It's that I didn't think there would be that this big of a discrepancy in their value. Like, there was a lot of leagues that you guys talked about in our comments that said Jaden Daniels was like stone cold lock
101. I've heard him go.
What's up?
I've heard Jaden Daniels go 101 in some leagues.
Yeah, no, exactly. And again, I still prefer Drake May. I'm still steadfast on that opinion. It's just, it's really hard to say I'm going to take Drake May 103 and sacrifice all the value I could have had if I traded down to 105 or 106 and had Drake May fall to me. It's the same reason why we said, do your due diligence. There's no reason to take Marvin Harrison 101 if you can get a second round pick to trade down to 102. The same can be said for Drake May. We would be comfortable taking him 103, but we never had to.
I mean, I did have to in a couple of leagues. Again, there is a big difference. A lot of you guys are not playing with people that specifically watch your content and know what you think about them. So it's not like I can pull a fast one on you guys in the leagues we're in and just say, hey, I'm going to trade down to the 106, get Drake May, and get an extra juice, extra pick or extra wide receiver that I like. Because quite frankly, if I tried to play some funny business like that, the guy at 104 would just take Drake May.
Yeah, no, and I got less Drake May shares than I wanted because of that, because all of you guys, most of the leagues I play in are with you guys. So again, if you're in leagues where nobody listens to us, they don't know our opinion whatsoever. People were getting Drake May 105, 106, 107, wow, left, right, and center. But me and you, it was harder for us to actually physically trade down from like 103 and still get Drake May at 105, 106. But again, we're not giving ourselves advice. We understand how to adjust to that ourselves, but giving you guys advice, a lot of you, if you haven't had your rookie draft yet, we'll have a very easy time trading down from 103, 104 to 105, 106 if you want Drake May, if you want a quarterback. And again, we broke down exactly why we prefer Drake May to Jaden Daniels during the first video and during the pre-draft process. And again, that is linked down below in the description. But essentially, it was just that Drake May was an early declare prospect, big arm, also very mobile, has a chance to really contribute as a fantasy player. And Jaden Daniels, while he's an electric runner, had a lot of warts on film as far as like passing under pressure and accuracy and things of that nature. Plus, he was a lot older of a prospect. He had Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. to throw to, that kind of thing. So again, the full spiel is listed in the description. Let's get into the next tier of players here. We have Romo Dunze, JJ McCarthy, and Brock Bowers. The first time we did this, it was just Romo Dunze and JJ McCarthy in this tier, because famously, I had Brock Bowers a little bit lower, thinking that the market would react a lot staunchly against Brock Bowers than they did. I was surprised that everybody was willing to push Brock Bowers all the way up to a top two, top three dynasty tight end. I thought the market was going to sour more on him than they did, and he was going to be tight end five or six in dynasty, not nearly worth as much as JJ McCarthy, as Romo Dunze. Again, with each one of these guys, the cases are very simple. Odunze, very talented prospect, would have been wide receiver one in many other classes, goes now tethered to Caleb Williams long-term. They obviously have developed a good chemistry over the last couple months. JJ McCarthy lands in the absolute nutted gold mine of quarterback landing spots with Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, if he can keep his head on straight, TJ Hawkinson, great coaching staff, pass heavy offense. And then Brock Bowers himself, best tight end prospect we've ever seen, goes to, yes, a subpar situation with Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew as the quarterbacks. Devontae Adams, obviously the clear number one there for now. But a year from now, he's the type of asset that you invest in. Watch the early returns of him just being a great player and probably producing a decent amount from a redraft perspective, because he's a top 10 tight end in redraft ADP right now. And then long term, let's say they draft a quarterback first overall next year, top five next year, and we have Devontae Adams gone as well, potentially. They could, like you just made reference to, maybe they pair him with his college quarterback in Carson Beck. Brock Bowers is a guy that I came around on a little bit. Previously, I had him in the tier below, and I actually had Xavier Worthy ranked ahead of him. But Brock Bowers, any kind of half tight end premium, full tight end premium league, he is the reason that that cutoff became 108, not 107, as we talked about in the first video.
Yeah, you pretty much hit the nail on the head with Brock Bowers. The moment you draft him, you're instantly getting a player that's valued within the top three, top two overall at his position. Again, I will still make the argument the reason why McCarthy and Odunze, even in a tight end premium format, are ranked higher is that, quite simply, Sam LaPorta is the tight end one in Dynasty. Where does he go in startups? Where does the wide receiver 12 go in startups? Where does the quarterback 9 go in startups? You know what I'm saying? Like, if Roma Dunze and JJ McCarthy reach their upside, inherently they will hold more value than Brock Bowers. Again, you can make the argument from a point equity standpoint, from a positional advantage standpoint, tight end premium standpoint, that some people may prefer Brock Bowers to be the 106 because he's got a cleaner projection, especially early on, than Roma Dunze and JJ McCarthy do. Roma Dunze obviously fending targets from Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. JJ McCarthy possibly not starting the year as the starter for the Minnesota Vikings. But I would argue that while Brock Bowers is a safer bet to maintain or slightly increase in value, I would rather at this point, if I'm at 106 and I need quarterback, wide receiver, and tight end pretty much evenly across the board, taking the swing on the guy that could potentially be a top two round startup pick.
Yeah, like I think, like I said, Brock Bowers is a, like, the type of dynasty asset that steadily increases in value. He's like the S&P 500. People who invest in the S&P 500 know it's just a steady return on investment, whereas JJ McCarthy and Romo Dunze are like that stock your uncle told you about, where they're great stocks, but they're volatile a little bit more so than Brock Bowers is. But the return, if JJ McCarthy looks like a great quarterback, will be that he's a first round startup pick. Like, he has that upside just because of the offense and the weapons group and the coaching staff that he's tethered to. And Odunze, if Caleb looks like Caleb, which we're all kind of expecting by taking him 101, and Romo Odunze is his dude, and DJ Moore and him are going to be 1A, 1B or something long term because Keenan Allen's older, then Odunze is going to be a mid-second round startup pick this time next offseason. It would be really difficult for Brock Bowers to have that level of increase, unless Aiden O'Connell's just like a superstar and we don't know this, but most likely it's going to come at the benefit of 2025 and beyond for Brock Bowers, which is why he's a little bit, he's still in this tier. Like I said, I would have no problem if somebody wanted to take him 106 or 107 over these guys in like a tight end premium format, but it's just, it's a little bit more of a slow burn as opposed to these other guys who could really just fly right up.
Yeah, no, 100%. There's going to be some people out there that prioritize floor and hitting the double, which I think, you know, Brock Bowers should, assuming he adapts the NFL the way he was able to dominate college football as a true freshman. And you know what? Doubles are absolutely great in baseball, but you know what's even better is having the guy that goes up to the plate with everybody in the stadium fearing for that home run.
Yeah, and exactly. And to be clear, Brock Bowers is probably a home run year two and three, just not a home run in year one because of the situation that he's in.
From a scoring perspective, I'm more so meaning from an value accumulation standpoint, I would say swinging for Brock Bowers would basically be like you're guaranteed the single and he's probably going to end up being a double, versus swinging for Odunze and McCarthy is like you might miss, but also you have the opportunity to just go home.
Yeah, and they're also like strikes right over the middle of the plate, like good prospects, good situation. So it's not like we're swinging at, you know, foul ball kind of territory here. Anyways, we're not baseball guys. We're going to move down to Xavier Worthy, Ladd McConkey, Brian Thomas Jr., Jonathan Brooks, and Bo Nix, which make up kind of the end of the first round, early second round tier. If you guys are keeping track here, that would be the 109, 110, 111, 112, and 201, respectively, in a Superflex rookie draft. The difference between this tier now and the time that we did this back 3 months ago, April 29th or whatever it was, is, I mean, the wide receivers haven't changed. I mean, I have Worthy one, you have Thomas one, we both have McConkey two, and then the other guys three respectively for us. Yeah. So, I mean, Worthy, we're getting the buzz in training camp. He's catching bombs from Patrick Mahomes. We all knew that was coming. Ladd McConkey is getting a lot of positive talk as well as a guy that can come in right away. Beat reporters are saying he's going to start from day one. That's all great news. So I feel comfortable with those guys. Brian Thomas been a little bit more of a slow burn, saying that like he doesn't ask questions, but he just knows what to do. Not really sure I know what to make of that coach speak right now, but still I feel confident Brian Thomas Jr. is going to be a great field stretcher for Trevor Lawrence. The new addition to this tier is Jonathan Brooks. I didn't have him in this tier before. I don't believe you had him in this tier before as well. And then we'll talk about Bo Nix in a second. Jonathan Brooks, the reason he's kind of found his way in here is that a lot of people through the rookie drafts that I did, a lot of the rookie drafts that you guys did, found that Jonathan Brooks was going towards the tail end of round one, and also his overall like startup ranking value in terms of our community rankings. We're talking about a guy that's like in the 60s. Like he's a guy that legitimately people are touting already as a top 12 dynasty running back. And even though I preferred slightly Trey Benson before the season, I think people understand and recognize that once Jonathan Brooks is healthy, he has a chance to really command a big workload in Carolina and be a three down back. They've pretty much said nothing but that since he was drafted, that he's going to be the dude, the guy that can contribute on all three downs. So Jonathan Brooks, I don't know. Did your opinion change on him at all? Or is it just a matter of, if I don't rank this guy a little bit higher, I'm never going to get him in rookie drafts?
So for me with Jonathan Brooks, he was always my RB1 in the offseason. The main difference I would say is that he was, I believe, my 14th overall player before going into rookie draft cycle. And now he's my 12th overall player. The only difference is that he hopped Bo Nix and Keon Coleman respectively. And it's pretty much exactly what you said there. The only reason he's even only an 8th round pick on Underdog right now is that people are expecting him to come in as a slow burner in the season. If he was, you know, announced tomorrow, he's not going to start the season on the pup. His knee progress is looking great. He's expected to be the day one starter. I can tell you right now, Underdog drafters would be drafting this guy in round five, round six, even in the depleted running back market, versus right now, even understanding the health of Trey Benson being intact, he still goes after his own teammate, James Conner, and he's still a 10th round overall best ball pick. So although, again, I always viewed Benson and Brooks close relative to each other, and I actually did have Brooks one, but I do feel like the gap has to be a little bit larger, knowing that if Brooks comes onto the scene week one, week two, looks healthy from that ACL injury and is getting 18 to 20 touches, his value accumulation at the running back position will be a faster rise than maybe the slow burn of Trey Benson having to fight off a guy like James Conner.
Yeah, like it feels like as a dynasty market, we understand that running backs coming off of ACL tears aren't going to be superstars right away and might take some time. Whereas the dynasty market does understand that if there's a running back who's very capable or even potentially better than you in your backfield, it's going to limit your upside to some degree. And not once has the Arizona Cardinals coaching staff said this is going to be a 50-50 timeshare. In fact, they've said the complete opposite. They've said that it's going to be James Conner's job and he is the clear lead back here. So as much as I love Trey Benson, I think he's probably a contingent upside play in his rookie season. Maybe towards the end of the season, James Conner starts getting banged up. They start using Trey Benson a little bit more. But notoriously, as we talked about with Trey Benson on his film breakdown, he is a little bit of a raw player. He still does need some development. And James Conner is a perfect guy to learn from.
Professional running back.
Exactly. You learn from a pro running back like James Conner, but the dynasty market isn't going to really let you do that. Like if you're not producing the first 10 weeks of the season, I'm going to be shouting from the top of the mountaintops to be buying Trey Benson. But at the same time, we could have said the same thing about Kendre Miller last year and he lost a lot of value, right? So that's kind of where it's at with Benson. Is he Javonte Williams rookie season, where by the end of his rookie season, he had elevated himself to a top five dynasty running back? Or is he Kendre Miller's rookie season, where the starter in front of him produces all year, stays healthy, and looks like he's clearly the best guy in that backfield?
Yeah, I mean, the example, funny enough, last year, one of the examples was, I mean, Devon Achane's breakout week was what, week three?
Something like that, yeah.
Around there. I remember after week one, he didn't get a lot of burn. People were really worried about what his role was going to be on the Dolphins. I mean, Raheem Mostert came out, was the RB1 in fantasy across the first couple of weeks. People were relatively low on Devon Achane for a little bit there. And guess what? If you were able to buy, you know, Devon Achane at RB26 cost prior to his breakout, man, you're probably laughing. So with Trey Benson, it could be a very similar situation. Again, Raheem Mostert versus James Conner, you know, professional running backs, touchdown scorers in their offenses. But if Benson is able to get, like Devon Achane, a little bit of work in and show his efficiency, show his breakaway ability, because again, he's not Devon Achane. Obviously, they are different running backs. Benson, more physical, more of a tackle breaker. Devon Achane, more elusive, bigger game-breaking speed. But in terms of just the young running back being able to take over the mantle, it's a relatively similar situation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we, I mean, Benson's actually in the next tier, so we'll just kind of skip over him when we get to him. But Bo Nix is the last guy that's in this tier. I feel like with Bo Nix, nothing has changed in terms of my opinion of him, because me and you both thought pretty highly of him coming in. But I feel like people are starting to come around on the market on Bo Nix, which feels great, because Bo Nix had good film. He was drafted top 12 in the NFL draft. And in our draft guide, in our redraft guide, you can follow all the coach speak, basically, because I've outlined basically everything that's come out from each NFL team in our redraft guide. And anything that's come out about Bo Nix has been, he looks like a professional. He's ahead of where most rookies would be, which is expected. He was a very experienced quarterback in college. He has one of his weapons on his offense now with Troy Franklin, and Sean Payton's a good coach. So I feel like Bo Nix, even though he's still 112, 201, that's about the range that I want to draft him in a Superflex rookie draft, I feel better about clicking him now than I did before. Yeah, it just feels like that pick went up in value a little bit rather than him actually raising his own value personally.
Yeah, and by all reports, so this is actually on Sports Illustrated's Denver, and obviously, you're going to have all the information here, but it is funny that apparently, like, the sentiment around a lot of the Denver beat reporters is that Sean Payton already knows that Bo Nix is his guy, but he's, you know, the old-fashioned coach. He kind of, you know, wants to say, hey, this is a competition, you know, we're not going to rush anything, he's got to earn it, but by all accounts, Bo Nix is taking every positive step he can. And like I said, apparently Sean Payton has already kind of made up his decision. It's just he wants to keep that camp competitive. And it's funny because, I mean, with Bo Nix, you know, older prospect, this is exactly what we were saying in the pre-draft cycle, that he's the exact quarterback that Sean Payton would love to get his hands on, an efficient distributor that can run Sean Payton's offense. But it's kind of funny that all it really needed was people to publicize this, and now the market's all of a sudden fine of them, even though before the draft, people were like, oh, like, what's it going to be? Like, this was always going to be how it worked out.
Yeah, exactly. We were saying this is a pro-ready quarterback. They need someone to start because they were going to start Jarrett Stidham. Yeah. And we would say, like, hey, this guy's going to come into an NFL team, probably not going to be the best quarterback in the NFL, but can he be a top 15 quarterback? If he's a young quarterback, like, dude, if Bo Nix plays at a top 15 level, like, he plays as good as Baker Mayfield played last year, for example, Bo Nix will rise in dynasty value, whether it's warranted or not, because young quarterbacks on their rookie deals, they'll go up in value. And Sean Payton on May 23rd saying that he's farther along than most rookies would be, and on July 6th saying he's done nothing but impress his teammates and coaches. Like, that's exactly what I expected to come out from Bo Nix, because that's what we saw when he was in college.
Yeah.
Is that he was impressing everybody. He looked like he knew what he was doing. He was distributing the ball. He was a good leader, that kind of thing. So let's move into the next tier, and we'll kind of wrap this up a little bit sooner than we can here. Again, we're getting into the second round players here. This is the 202 through like the 207, 208 here. We have Trey Benson, who we already kind of talked about. No need to really go into his case. Keon Coleman, wide receiver of the Buffalo Bills. Michael Penix Jr., quarterback, famously of the Atlanta Falcons. They made a big mistake when they drafted him, according to a lot of people. Xavier Leggett, wide receiver of the Carolina Panthers. Again, they traded back up in the first round for him. Jalen Polk, top 40 pick of the New England Patriots. Adonai Mitchell, top 55, top 60 pick of the Indianapolis Colts in the second round. And then Ricky Pearsall, again, end of the first round pick to the San Francisco 49ers. With each one of these guys, it's kind of pick your flavor in terms of the receivers. I mean, Keon Coleman is consensus-wise the one that has gone the highest. He's the one, I think, personally, yeah, he's definitely going the highest in underdog drafts right now of these wide receivers, because he landed with Josh Allen. He's on the Buffalo Bills. There's a lot of target competition not there in a great offense, which is why, you know, if Keon Coleman hits, he's really going to rise himself up the dynasty rankings, up the league winner rankings and that kind of thing. So Keon Coleman is a guy that I feel very comfortable taking at the early second round price tag that you're getting him at, because normally a player with this much upside would come as a 109, 110, like Quentin Johnston, for example, last year, very similar situation, goes to an offense, older wide receivers, great quarterback. And he was a guy you had to take 108, 109. And Keon Coleman, very similar bet and potentially even better film than Quentin Johnston. And he's going 202, 203.
Yeah, no, it is pretty funny. Now, the way I would kind of describe this tier is that, again, it is seventh to ninth round startup picks. I do feel like there's a slight gap between, you know, Benson, Coleman, Penix, and potentially Leggett, depending on how you guys are on him. Again, we personally like Leggett a lot, so I would include him in that tier. But even if you wanted to say the tier is after Penix and it's like Leggett, Polk, A.D. Mitchell, Ricky Pearsall on their own kind of sub tier, if you will. That is just the difference between a seventh rounder versus a eighth or ninth rounder. So we kind of group them together. You mentioned it with Keon Coleman. This is a guy that the redraft market, the underdog market, is very high on, a guy that's consistently going inside the top 80, top 85 overall picks over on underdog. So the market sentiment is that he should end up being and materializing into the wide receiver one going into the season. He's going ahead of both Curtis Samuel and Khalil Shakir, veteran receivers on that roster. And that was the concern, maybe, is that potentially the redraft projection for Keon Coleman would have paled against some of these other guys. But the fact that the redraft market, the fact that the underdog market, the best ball drafters are confident in him being able to produce in year one, he's the type of player where if he shows any positive signs, maybe there's a game where he goes five catches for 77 yards and two touchdowns and he mosses someone at the end of the back of the end zone. He is the type of player attached to Josh Allen where if he shows those positive signs, he could end up being in that fifth, sixth round startup tier. He is the type of player that, although we prefer the worthy McConkey, Brian Thomas film, the market as a whole could prop up into that tier if he shows good signs early.
Yeah, not to mention Coleman compared to the rest of the receivers in this tier in the FSE prospect model ranked as a wide receiver three upside player. And wide receiver three upside players, to give you guys an idea, hit a 15 plus point per game season at a 29% clip and peak as a wide receiver one in Dynasty at a 24% clip, peak as a wide receiver two in Dynasty at a 45% clip. And then again, you factor in that he plays for the Buffalo Bills. If he has a good rookie season, he will definitely be closer to peaking as a wide receiver one in Dynasty because of the offense and the quarterback that he's tethered to. Whereas Leggett, Polk, and Mitchell are flex play territory prospects. And those guys peak as a wide receiver one just 15% of the time, peak as a wide receiver two just 29% of the time. And Pearsall actually a dart throw caliber prospect. So he's more 7%, 15%. Respectively there. But again, all these guys got good draft capital. I would say objectively speaking, even though their profiles were not the greatest, Leggett, Polk, Mitchell, and Pearsall all had good film, all had, you know, coaching staffs and roles with their new teams. Like, I feel good that Leggett fits his new offense with Canales there. I feel that Polk fits his new offense with Drake May being a quarterback who's going to want to throw it over the middle to a reliable target. A.D. Mitchell, he's got a solidified number one wide receiver on the other side of him to take away good coverage. Got a good shifty slot receiver there. He just needs to be the field stretching outside guy early in his career, just like my comp for him was George Pickens. That's exactly what he needs to do early in his career to gain value. And then Ricky Pearsall, I mean, he just gets to learn from a bunch of great players. And if Ayuk goes somewhere next year or maybe gets traded or whatever, then he'll maybe move up in terms of his overall redraft projection. But right now at a Ricky Pearsall, like, just do what JSN did as a rookie, except like more efficient targets per route run wise, and we'll probably feel pretty good about you.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned, you know, JSN, because JSN entered the year potentially banged up. It was actually reported today that Ricky Pearsall is dealing with a hamstring pull and is expected to miss some time. So we'll monitor the situation. Again, I'm sure you'll probably cover that in the news of the day. But yeah, I think you summed it up perfectly with Michael Penix Jr. Obviously, the case is more so the value accrual case. This is not a guy we're expecting to get onto the field in year one, possibly not even year two. Again, by year two, it's probably going to be more of a consensus by then that, oh, Kirk Cousins had a MVP caliber year one. It's probably going to be Kirk Cousins in year two, or vice versa. Maybe he struggles off the Achilles. We'll have more context to how fast Penix will get onto the field. But ultimately, having top 10 draft capital insurance, being able to get that type of insulated asset at quarterback in the early to mid second round, again, this is the type of profile that in most draft classes you would be forced to take in the first round. So being able to spend, like I said, a mid-second round pick on Michael Penix, again, you're not expecting a ton of production right away, but if he does eventually materialize into where Jared Goff, Tua Tagovailoa are valued on the quarterback market, paying a mid-second for a 24-year-old version of that, you'll take every single time.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that Jordan Love happened is great news for Michael Penix's is patience on the market, because if Jordan Love never happened, and what I mean by Jordan Love is like he was drafted, he had to wait his turn, and then he eventually paid off. People who were buying Jordan Love look like geniuses, because Jordan Love is worth a whole lot more now than he was worth last offseason. But had that never happened, we might be a little bit more concerned about Michael Penix's open market value. And I feel like most dynasty players understand that he's not going to play early on in his career. So if he's worth, let's say, an early second right now, he'll probably be worth an early second next year, even if he doesn't play at all during his rookie season. So that has made me come around a little bit on Penix, because generally speaking, I would say we were a little bit lower on Penix.
On the film, for sure.
I mean, if he is playing right away, like, or he is playing relatively soon, you have great young weapons. You have a great offensive coordinator. They're going to throw the ball really well. It's very similar to what he had at Washington, which was what made him successful, which is good receivers, a good scheme, good play calling, and all that kind of stuff. So with Michael Penix, it's like, yeah, rebuilders, teams who are taking over orphans and stuff, this is the perfect pick for you. He's not going to get you any points. He's going to tank your own 2025 first, and he's going to be more valuable in 25, 26 than he is now.
And the overall draft capital is the main reason why he's such a safe bet, because if he had the exact same profile in terms of as a prospect, potentially working behind a veteran, but instead of eighth overall, that was 38th overall, we're looking at a different valuation, because then at that point you would argue, hey, the market's not attached to his top 10 overall draft capital, that if he doesn't start right away, maybe he ends up being worth a third. But realistically, because he was a top 10 pick, like, what would need to happen for him to not be a second round valuation? Would he need to come in and legitimately look like Zach Wilson? Because, like, I think he'd probably have to get hurt potentially. Yeah, like, but even if he gets hurt, people will
like a major. But his narrative was that he was injury prone, right? So if he got hurt, it would probably be more detrimental like to him one, than it would be for another quarterback.
No, that's definitely fair. It'd have to be in a major one, because even like a minor one, like, I'm looking at it, like, even if he looks, you know, mediocre, 78 overall passer rating in his first year, and he gets limited game time, it's like, even if he doesn't look good, he's going to be worth a mid-second rounder in 2025 rookie drafts.
Yeah, like, if he blew his knee or his shoulder again, then that would be
an issue, obviously,
to his value, because those were the two injuries he had in college. So that would probably be the only way. But if he's not playing, that's way less likely of happening, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. So moving off of Penix, I mean, we'll quickly run down. I mean, did we mention anything on Leggett, Polk?
With all of these guys, like I said, with Leggett and Polk, you're betting on the fact that they could be number ones of their offense. So that's how they gain value. If they establish connections with their young quarterbacks, that would be great for them. With Mitchell and with Pearsall, we kind of want to see efficiency and good metrics, like underlying yards per route run, targets per route run, things of that nature. But we're not expecting, at least I'm not, for Mitchell and Pearsall especially. They have target competition. Mitchell's probably not going to be in a very pass-heavy offense. Pearsall, same thing. But come 2025, maybe they look like they're going to project a little bit better, because maybe things have cleared up, or we know Richardson's a great quarterback, or Ayuk is gone, or whatever the case is. So with those guys, it's like they're also good rebuilding acquisitions. But at the same time, they're not the caliber of prospects that I think are like must-draft players. Like, I'm very much fine passing on players like this if you're in a position where you could just trade that pick, if you haven't had your rookie draft yet, for a veteran player that can help your team. Like, if you can trade the 206 where you're going to take A.D. Mitchell for Christian Kirk to help your team, or, you know, Deebo Samuel, like you said, or Amari Cooper or Mike Evans or something, then I'd be totally fine doing that. That's kind of why there's almost like a mini tier break between Penix, Coleman, and Benson and the rest of these guys, is because the area 204 to 207 is kind of trade for veteran range if you are a competitive team.
Yeah, I think you pretty much summed it up. With Leggett, big time upside. The overall floor is obviously volatile, but we like the fit there. And to be honest, I mean, the one I actually feel most confident on potentially producing early, again, you guys know my thoughts into Mario Douglas, but I also really like Jalen Polk, man. Like, landing,
me too. He's one of my highest drafted players on Underdog right now.
Yeah, whether it's Jacoby Brissett or Drake May, he is the archetype that I'm not going to make this comparison, because obviously it is crazy to even say, but if anybody were to be quote unquote this year's Puka Nacua, it'd be the guy that could potentially work as that Z/slot wide receiver for the Patriots, potentially show up as a rookie and show the exact same qualities for why he was a high second round pick. Again, obviously Puka fell in the draft, but Puka Nacua falling in the draft was more so because we didn't really have the sample size, man. He was banged up in college. People were kind of concerned about, you know, his health. People were kind of concerned about the limited sample size that we saw from him in college. Whereas with Jalen Polk, I mean, we saw him legitimately catch passes from Michael Penix Jr., make a national championship, and arguably, you know, he wasn't on the same level of Roman Dunze, but was arguably one of the top 10, top 15 overall receivers in the nation in college football. Again, obviously his physical traits, his physical limitations had him fall comparatively to some of the wide receivers in the draft. But in terms of just being a producing wide receiver, Jalen Polk's role in that Patriots offense should be able to materialize right away.
Yeah, and if you think about the receivers that hit last year, Rashee Rice, Jaden Reed, Tank Dell, Puka Nacua.
Rashee Rice was our comp.
Yeah, literally. Jordan Addison, all of those players were asked to play a role in their offense, and they played their role really well. And none of those players, outside of Addison, I guess, were prospects that we felt extremely high about. But Jaden Reed went to a situation where he was asked to be a gadget guy, slot receiver. That's what he did. Tank Dell was asked to be, again, more of a slot receiver, field stretcher kind of guy. Obviously, he was better than we thought he was. Rashee Rice asked to be kind of a short, move the chains, yards after catch guy. That's what Jalen Polk can do, especially with Drake May and Jacoby Brissett. Two guys are going to want to, they're big, tall quarterbacks. They want to throw it over the middle of the field to somebody with reliable hands. It's exactly what Jalen Polk is. And people get obsessed with upside all the time when it comes to rookie drafts, but one guy can just play football and one guy can't. And Jalen Polk to me is not the type of receiver that I expect to us to look at in week 9 of the NFL season and be like, yeah, this guy just can't play. I just don't think that'll be the case. Maybe he's not the highest ceiling guy in the world, but that's what we said about Chris Olave. And Chris Olave has been a top 10 dynasty wide receiver for the last 3 years now. Finally, closing out the second round, if you guys are doing your rookie drafts here, we have Troy Franklin, wide receiver of the Denver Broncos, Jalen Wright, running back of the Miami Dolphins, Blake Corum, running back of the Los Angeles Rams, and Marshawn Lloyd, running back of the Green Bay Packers. We can skim through these guys quick because I want to keep this video around 45 minutes. Troy Franklin, best wide receiver prospect to ever go on day three in the FSE prospect model. So that is why he ranks this high. He also was barely a day three pick. He was like the 102nd pick in the draft. In some years, that's actually a third rounder. And he has his college quarterback with Bo Nix. He's a great fit for that field stretching role. They can use him the way that Sean Payton has used field stretching wide receivers like Kenny Stills or Ted Ginn in years past. I think Troy Franklin can be a great contributor there. Jalen Wright, also a perfect fit for the Dolphins offense. They just know how to scout running backs for their scheme. He's a downhill, physical, fast runner, right? 4.3 speed. Exactly the type of runner that fits in the Miami Dolphins offense. Redraft wise, again, a little bit of a suspect projection for Jalen Wright because Mostert's there and Achane is there, but he's got dual handcuff upside. And if Mostert, who's like 33 years old or whatever, is gone after this year, Jalen Wright might be the number two or the 1B in Miami, because we know, as I've brought up a million times, Devon Achane probably not the type of running back who's going to command 25 touches a game. So they're going to have room for another running back in that backfield. Blake Corum and Marshawn Lloyd both receiving high praise in their respective backfields for the roles that they could have this year. Kyren Williams, Josh Jacobs, we know both of those guys capable of carrying a workload. At the very least, these two guys are very strong handcuffs this year. And if at the very most, potentially, maybe they're fighting for a 50-50 workload split in their backfield.
Yeah, and with Troy Franklin, again, we mentioned the pro readiness, if you will, of Bo Nix potentially being the starter entering the year. Like you said, with Troy Franklin, an overqualified day three prospect lands literally in the exact situation where A, he command outside snaps right off the bat. Again, typically we can't say from a day three pick that they can command outside snaps right off the bat, but Troy Franklin is one of the rare few because, quite frankly, outside of Cortland Sutton, there is a lot to be desired in that Denver Broncos wide receiver room. So again, the risk is there. The reason why he is even in this 10th to 12th tier and not the 7th to 9th is because he fell to day three, because quite frankly, in terms of just comparing the prospects, he was a top 10 overall graded receiver for me. And I had a better grade on him than I did a guy like Ricky Pearsall. So the fact that he goes day three, you kind of have to alleviate it, put him in the tier down. But I would not be shocked if after the year, everybody's like, why did this guy even go on day three? This was as clear as day, fast, you know, field stretching wide receiver, and we just let him fall to day three to pair with his college quarterback. And in terms of three running backs, Jalen Wright, you kind of mentioned the athletic upside that he has, the scheme fit that he has there with Mike McDaniel and the Miami Dolphins, and the double contingent upside in the sense that Devon Achane missed some time because he couldn't hold up to his overall workload. Again, I am very, very bullish on Devon Achane, but it's hard not to acknowledge that Jalen Wright is a very damn good prospect in his own right, a guy that I had ranked as my RB3 overall in the offseason cycle. So he goes there. Again, obviously, Raheem Mostert, I didn't even mention, older running back, 18 touchdown year, big breakout year this past year, but this is the same Raheem Mostert that people were saying were injury prone coming into the season. So do we really think a year and a big time touch workload is going to impact that overall rationale that he could very well go down this year? Jalen Wright, if he gets any opportunity, 30, 35, 40% of the opportunities in the Miami backfield, we could be looking at another efficiency monster over there in Miami. And it's a lot easier of a path for Blake Corum and Marshawn Lloyd. Admittedly, I had a higher grade on Jalen Wright than I had these guys respectively. But with Blake Corum, he is almost a one-for-one clone of Kyren Williams in that backfield, in the sense that they're shorter backs, they're tough, thick physical running backs. Again, you can make the case, obviously, you know, Kyron Williams weighed in 192 pounds, but stylistically, the way he plays is a between the tackles runner, is a guy that can finish through contact. And Blake Corum really represents that to a T. On top of that, this is a team with the Rams. I mentioned in the Kyron Williams bit of our third round video, the Rams want to run the football in the red zone. I mean, Kyron Williams was a top five overall running back in volume inside the 20, 13 inside the five opportunities, despite missing five games last year. So if whether it's because Kyron missed time or whether it's Blake Corum just showing that red zone prowess, that goal line prowess that he did at Michigan, even if he's not a 55%, 60% opportunity share running back, even on 35, 40% of the opportunities for what I think is going to be one of the top offenses, for what I think is going to be a team that runs the ball a ton in that red zone area, he can still pay off RB3 overall upside in the role standalone right now. And if Kyron were to go down, I mean, we saw Kyron literally be the RB2 in fantasy points per game. Marshawn Lloyd, again, Josh Jacobs, big workload in the past, obviously signs that big contract, but he's not been the most efficient running back. He's been battling through some injuries, and maybe with the Green Bay coaching staff rather than the Las Vegas Raiders. We saw in Las Vegas that even when Josh Jacobs was fighting through injuries, he was on the field every goddamn snap. I can tell you right now with Green Bay, I mean, we've seen it with Aaron Jones these last few years. Josh Jacobs gets banged up, they have no problem turning back to a committee.
Yeah, and the quotes that have come out of Green Bay, we want to use Marshawn Lloyd as much as possible. That was the Packers OC on May 6th. We also have a quote here, which was Marshawn Lloyd should have an early impact for the Packers, which is an Athletic beat reporter that covers the team. Like the drum beat has been pretty consistent for both Corum and Lloyd that they're going to be big parts of the offense. Let's go through and rattle off just these last couple guys. Again, we're going through our top 30 overall Superflex rookie rankings right now. Audric Estime, running back of the Broncos, subject of a lot of buzz right now for the Denver Broncos, with Javonte Williams potentially being on the roster bubble. Ben Sinnott, said it right that time. Washington Commanders tight end. Maybe he's a fullback, maybe he's a tight end. I tend to believe he's going to be more of these slow burn kind of guys as well, which is why he's outside my top 24. Jalen McMillan, wide receiver of the Buccaneers. He is getting a shit ton of buzz in OTAs and training camp. I guarantee that'll continue to pick up. My guess is that he's going to win out the third wide receiver job. Malachi Corley, again, we haven't heard a whole lot about him yet, other than that Rodgers really liked him in the draft process, I guess is the only thing we've really heard about him. But there's
funny
room.
Enough.
Yeah, there's room in that offense, though, for Malachi Corley to potentially contribute. Then Javon Baker, similar to Jalen Polk, wide open wide receiver core, big X-style wide receiver. Jermaine Burton, also a guy that could carve out a role in Cincinnati, but probably not the highest ceiling guy early in his career, while T. Higgins is still there this year and while Ja'Marr Chase is still there this year. So these guys, all kind of early third round picks. We stand by where we had them. We had pretty much the same list of dudes. Yeah. Back in April that we have now, but I would say with some of these guys, Estime, McMillan, Javon Baker, Jermaine Burton, I feel a little bit better about them now than I did back then, just because I feel a little better about their roles.
Yeah, and a quick run through. It's funny you mentioned that bit with Corley, that Rodgers absolutely loved him, because my comp for him was quite literally Randall Cobb. So it makes sense that Aaron Rodgers loved him, knowing that relationship he had with Randall Cobb. I mean, shout out historically, Randall Cobb being the receiver that no matter what, Rodgers wants back on the roster, even if he's not clearly the same player that he was back in 2013. So kind of funny there. Javon Baker, like you said, Drake May, obviously he's got DeMario Douglas as a slot receiver. He's got a Z receiver potentially there with Jalen Polk. I do feel like Javon Baker profiles as that X receiver for them long term. I think this is a team that's going to run a ton of 11 personnel if these receivers develop. With Drake May, obviously, of course, occupying that quarterback position, I do feel like we could see them potentially open up the 11 personnel in New England. Jermaine Burton, big time overall third level threat, goes to Joe Burrow, goes to the Cincinnati Bengals, a team that likes to throw the football down the field. But with Jermaine Burton, he is a very talented player, and the way he pays off quite literally is just not being a knucklehead is kind of how I view his situation. McMillan, like you said, the guy that we both love, the guy that was a top 12 graded overall wide receiver for us, goes to your Tampa Bay Buccaneers, already making an impact. Not much else to say there. Ben Sinnott, a guy that has seen his ADP on Underdog really drop in these last few weeks. Like you said, a little bit of reports with the fullback stuff, not necessarily. I'll tell you right now, if he's available in the 17th round, I'm taking him every single time over on Underdog, because I still feel like he is that type of talent at the tight end position. Yak ability, the ability to be that intermediate threat for Jaden Daniels right off the bat. And then with Audric Estime, I mean, if this guy is the between the tackles runner for the Denver Broncos, you're already getting a big payoff. And by all accounts, it looks like the reports of Javonte Williams being on the roster bubble, people aren't really impressed with him. Obviously, he hasn't been the same back after coming back from injury. Estime is a guy that we both viewed as a clear-cut top four overall running back based on pure film in this past draft class.
Yeah, and again, there's some guys that didn't make our top 30s here, but I mean, Jatavion Sanders, tight end of the Panthers, Ray Davis, running back of the Bills, Kamani Vidal, running back of the Chargers, Roman Wilson, wide receiver of the Steelers, Malik Washington was one of my favorite sleepers in the draft, wide receiver of the Dolphins, Tez Walker, wide receiver of the Ravens, Luke McCaffrey, wide receiver of the Commanders, Tyrone Tracy, running back of the Giants, and then we have like Braylon Allen, who sounds like he's going to be the second back there in the Jets. There's a lot of guys in the third, fourth rounds. If you guys haven't had your rookie drafts yet, I strongly encourage you to go back, check out some of our stuff right after the NFL draft, talking about the sleepers of the class, talking about our must draft players, talking about some other stuff there. In addition to this video, you should definitely go check that stuff out. And if you haven't had your rookie draft yet, definitely want to check out our Dynasty Rookie Draft Guide to get all the, you know, film player take stuff about these players. You can get our Dynasty Rookie Draft Guide and our Dynasty Rookie Film Breakdowns, as well as our Redraft Guide to help you with those leagues for free when you sign up over on Underdog Fantasy using the promo code FSE. You'll get $250 in bonus cash, a special pick'em, as well as all those three bonuses from us for using our promo code and depositing just $10. And of course, if you already have an Underdog account or you can't play where you live right now, all of the stuff that I just mentioned, our Dynasty rankings, trade value charts, rookie rankings, everything you could want to use, our Dynasty trade calculator, our My Teams feature, you can load in your team, see how you stack up to your league mates, submit your teams for review as well. That is definitely something you want to check out. That is over on flockfantasy.com. Again, promo code FSE for 7 days for free, 30% off any of the packages. Annual mother flockers get 6 months for free, as well as a team review when they sign up using our promo code. So all that stuff will be linked down below in the description. Again, hopefully you guys enjoyed this updated Superflex rookie rankings. Let us know who you got the most of in your rookie drafts. I'm sure many of you guys have already had your rookie drafts, as me and Danny have already had ours. And who are you excited to see this year? Leave a like if you enjoyed this video. Subscribe if this is the first time you're checking us out. But with that being said, peace out, and we'll talk to you soon.